I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
They have got the man out wide. It's McGilvray for the corner, and McGilvray is in.
Right, so Super League is back, and so is the Talking with Giants podcast. We thought I'd bring it back, start a new season. Everyone's excited, so we thought we'd sit down and talk all things Giants. Joining me, we've got Jake Rowlands, star of the West Yorkshire Sport podcast. How are you doing?
Good, thank you, Josh. Yourself?
Yeah, all good. And we've got Nathaniel Wood. How are you, mate?
Good, thank you, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, all good. All the better for Friday night. We were all there. It was a great night, wasn't it? So, start off with, I think we should start with the review of the league game. We'll start with you, Nat. What are your main takeaways from that game?
My main takeaway was just how we defended. I thought it was probably the best defensive performance we've had since the beginning of 2022. I don't actually think we defended great at any point last year. And I think we fell off at the back end of 2022, as everyone knows. But, you know, the reason we got to a Challenge Cup final back a couple of years ago was off the back of his defence. And I think Watto spoke about in pre-season, how bringing that back was key. And I think that showed Friday night. I think they must have had more sets than us, and we did a lot more defending. It seemed anyway in the night, but we defended really, really well. And obviously, attack-wise, it'll come on, you know, the more we get into the season. But defensively, if you've got that on from round one, then we're going to be a tough team to beat if we could defend like that every single week.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That was before the game started. I said, that's what I want to see. I want to see the defence of 2022, and that's what we got. Jake, anything else to add to that?
Yeah, no, we're happy with Friday night. I saw the team sheet before the game, saw Lee's team sheet, and I thought they probably had, on paper, the better side. They had pretty much the starting 1-17 out there, quite a few danger men. I thought with some of the players that we'd have to select on Friday that, you know, they might have just got the better of us going into the game. But like Nat said, defensively, we were superb. We couldn't fault anyone in terms of the defensive effort. All muscled up. Particularly Adam Swift, a few noticeable last play options, coming out, smashing man, you know, that them sort of players would have walked straight through us last year. They'd just gone in the corner and would have probably lost the game. Made a massive difference on that left edge for me.
Yeah, that's what you touched on there is quite encouraging, because they had their first pretty much 1-17 out, didn't they?
Yeah.
And we were a few short in the pack, and we had Leroy playing loose forward. I think that's the first time in his career he's played there. So I was a bit worried, but our average gain was considerably higher than theirs. So that's really encouraging that we were making so many meters despite not having some of our biggest men out there. Jake, who were the standout performers for you?
Honestly, it was difficult to choose one on Friday. I've spoke to different people. I think I've come up with a different name every time. But mentioned Adam Swift for them defensive reads. I thought Chris Hill and Seb were immense to start with. They've sort of played in an aggressive way, which I've not seen us play like that for a long time. Just everyone, all those forwards. Hewitt, some men's for his size. Plays like somebody that's 5, 6, 10 kilograms heavier. Is awesome. And thought Jack Murchie as well on other second row was again awesome, just all night, just running it hard, decent meters, defensive efforts, brilliant. I mean, really hard to pick a man at match for me. Like I said, I've changed my mind a few times, so could have been anyone.
Could you pick one, Nat?
I thought Sky Sports got it right with Jack Murchie, if I'm honest. I actually went onto a podcast last week called The Only in Rugby League Podcast, and just did ask me to do a 2-minute review of what I expect from us this season. And one of the things I said on there is for our fans not to expect Jack Murchie to be Chris McQueen 2.0. as I think they're two different, totally different forwards. Chris McQueen's an explosive forward who will score tries. I think Jack Murch is just an 80-minute second rower who will do all the doggy work, work hard, make 50 tackles a game, not miss many. And I think his work rate on the left edge was outstanding, I think, yeah. So I think Sky got right with Murch, and I thought Adam Milne went really, really well. To say he probably had to play 70 minutes at nine, I think he'd only just come off for Ashton when Jake had to go off, and then he pushed Ashton back to fullback. Well, surprising that he's really well at fullback, so he's not played there for a few years himself. But Milner got brought back on, and you could see in the last 5-10 minutes he was probably blowing a bit, but you know, he kept putting his hands up and he kept shooting out line off. Yeah, so I thought Adam Milner, Jack Murcher, them two were definitely my standouts. Also, like Jake said, Sam Hewitt, Adam Swift came with big plays. Ethan Masters had a great game as well on the left edge. So yeah, there were quite a few, but Jack Murcher for me.
Yeah. I mean, I were critical of Ethan Masters and Ashton Golding on West Yorkshire Sport, but I have to take my half to pair of them on Friday night because that pass from Ashton was top draw, and that was something that I think he struggles with it past in terms of his passing abilities from fullback. But that pass to Elliot Wallace were class on Friday night, and to see he had to switch between two as well. Just good. And it looks a bit heavier now than when he used to play fullback, but he seemed to just have speed in his legs. That I'd not seen previously as well. And you just, take me off to a pair of them on Friday.
Going to that try, don't know what you two thought. I think if anyone else but Elliot Wallace on that right edge, it wouldn't have been a try.
Yeah.
I think Wallace has got a bit more pace than Sam Allsall and Jerry. Obviously, we'll speak what we were going around with last year. I think the pace got him into the corner, and Sam being a centre, not a winger, Elliot Wallace has got that technique to finish like that. I have to think if anyone else, I don't think we'd score that try.
No, look, they've all got their attributes, and I have to say, I mean, Jerry would score a lot of tries, others can't, but I think he'd have also probably, he wouldn't have made some of them defensive reads that Swift made either, potentially. I think he'd maybe one or two of them might have gone in if it were Jerry. He struggled with his defence in the last couple of years, and no, I don't think he would have scored the Elliot Wallace try. That were a quality finish, that.
Yeah, I think having out-and-out wingers on each side, something we've struggled with in the past, maybe playing people out of position on the wing. So I think it showed having, you know, proper wingers in attack, like you said, finishing that try, and then in defence, the defensive reads of Swift. So I think we saw the benefits in both attack and defence of having two out-and-out wingers.
Yeah, just touching on Sam Allsall, though, I mean, he's one player that I think can be particularly pissed off that he wanted squad on Friday. It was our best player last year. You know, and I thought he were awesome at centre in pre-season as well. But obviously, you can see coming away from the game now why Watto selected the two players he did on wings and centres. Maybe you could argue for Allsall, but after Friday, I don't see how you can really. But he's a hell of a player to be able to bring back in if there's an injury, because I think he's got a phenomenal career ahead of him here.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, they've got to keep the shirts because they know he's waiting in the wings. Stats from Friday's game. Do you want to run off with some of the headline stats?
Yeah, can do. We've got a few from the player stats. Wise, obviously, Josh, you mentioned Leroy playing at 13. He topped our tackle count with 43 tackles and only missing one. And I bet it's, I know you used to play 80 minutes out wide in the centres and stuff, but I bet he played, 65-70 minutes in the middle, which at 35-year-old, well, probably won't be easy for him, like I said, for the first time. So I think that's a great effort. Milner made 39, missing 5. Sam Hewitt, 35, missing 3. And Matt English with 31, missing 2. They were his top tacklers during the game. Ethan Masters made 150 metres. He was a top metre maker, with Jack Murchie second, 137. Adam Swift made 135. Seppi Cahifo made 129 and Leroy made 103. So I think it showed there that, you know, we've got a couple of backs in there and three forwards in there. So the workload, I thought, was spread around quite evenly. And another interesting stat I found when I was looking into it is a weird one, is kicks in general play. It was actually Jake Connor, Adam Clune, and Oliver Russell all kicked 6 kicks each. Now on the night, it didn't seem that Adam Clune kicked that many. It all seemed to go to Jake Connor.
No.
I thought on the night, just watching the game live, so I know Connor went off with, 20, 25 to go. So seeing that, I thought probably gives an extra dimension that we've got three kickers in the team there that, you know, even said two players instead of Russ, we've still got three kickers there, which defence, you can go either side, and the defence don't know who's kicking, who his main kicker is, really. So I think that's a definite plus in his attack.
Yeah. I mean, I know Jake had gone off in the last 10 minutes, but whether it would have been him or at least one of the others, I think, needed to step up and put one over posts when we were two up and kill the game off. Because we were talking about it at the time. You know, what if Lee scored straight away? And they did, didn't they? Which, if Ada could have kicked it, it'd have been a very nervous couple of minutes towards end of the game. So I think going forward, we've got to be better in those positions, for, you know, being able to manage the game better and kill them games off when we've got the opportunity to.
Yeah, I thought Clune would have taken that on, to be honest.
But yeah, I did. They just never set up for it.
It never looked like setting up for it, which they're happy just to die in the corner, weren't they? Which, again, I don't know if that's a Watson tactic, that he's happy to die in the corner and trust the DM. I mean, one requirement now is probably a bit of a funny comment. I don't know how you two will see about it, but conceding that try, I think actually won us the game, as stupid as it sounds. Because it was in the corner and he missed the kick, I think he was having that 2 minutes underneath the sticks to get his breath back. Like I said, the likes of Adam Milner were not used to playing 7 minutes in the middle, and Leroy not playing that big a minutes in the middle. Chris Hill not having a pre-season and being 35. I think them being able to get some oxygen into him and get under the sticks while that try happened and the video ref were deciding, I think that gave us a second wind after that. And obviously, like I say, I might not be saying that if Hardacre had kicked it from the touchline and there's only six in it, but once he missed and you still need to score two and you've got your breath back, I just thought, I think that actually won us the game and that definitely helped all, wouldn't it?
Saying that though, if you put one over at post, the three scores away, aren't they? So do the Reds just sink, then they go for a short kickoff, don't get it, you get ball back, you won't game, haven't you?
I agree. I'd have gone for one. I was saying at the time, set straight away, someone's got the ball, set up here for one, let's. But then again, like I say, Watson is, I find he's a very conservative coach.
Yeah.
And I just imagine he's a bit worried about us missing and giving seven tackles away, which can be only think of him happy dying with it in the corner. Unless Clune and Russ decided not to go for anyone or to the coach. We won't know, obviously, but I'd have gone for one, but...
Well, it all happens quite fast, doesn't it? You know, they've got to make a split decision.
Of course, it was never... It's always easy for us sat in the stands, isn't it, saying what you should do, but like I said, just because we're saying up for it doesn't mean you're nailed to get it either. What if they charge down and get the ball back 4 metres out from their try line because they've charged it down, then you're defending your line. You don't know, just because you're going to set up for it doesn't mean you're going to get it, does it?
No. Absolutely. Well, yeah, when he missed that kick, I knew. Obviously, as a fan, you always dread the worst, but I think if you watch as a neutral, when he missed that kick for the when it went to make it 16-10, I think when he missed that, we knew the game was ours. Just moving on to the recruitment, we saw five new signings in action. Swift, Clune, Murchie, Wallace, and Salabio came on for about 5 minutes at the end. And then also Tom Deacon and Andre Savelio were signed but haven't featured yet. I'm just going to have a quick talk about if we're happy with those seven signings. Nat, you want to go first? What do you think of our recruitment?
Yeah, so Adam Swift, I think, is a great Super League performer, great signing. I never knew actually, like, he's a great finisher, but never knew how good he was coming out of yardage. I think the carries he was coming out of yardage were probably just as good as Jerry has ever done for us. If anyone worried about that, I don't think... I thought him and Wallace, we was talking about both new wingers. I thought coming out of yardage, they're both very good. They're both natural finishers. They've both got plenty of speed. So I can see them two being great signings. Adam Clune, I think he'll be good once he settles in. Obviously, it's never easy for an RPAC from Australia. You expect him to settle in. Hopefully, Rose 2 and Jake can take a lot of pressure off him early on while he just settles in. And I think we'll see him grow as his contract goes on. I think the main thing for Clune is just keep him on the field. And like we've managed to do with the last couple of sevens we bought, you know, TFRs, etc. Let's keep Clune on the pitch. And I think we'll see the best of him later on when it gets drier, as you say. Tom Deacon, obviously, we've not seen yet, but I've heard good things, but I've only ever seen him pre-season, so we'll give him a go, see how he goes. Well, I think a lot of these members are only 19, 20 as well, so he's still a young man himself. Who else am I missing? So Jack Murchie, like I say, is totally different to Chris McQueen. I think he's a workhorse rather than an explosive one. Savelio, an interesting one. I've got a couple of mates who support Hull, who said if you can get his attitude right, then you've got a good signing, but he does have an attitude problem, apparently. So that'd be a test for the coaching staff to get right. And Hugo, I liked him pre-season, but I'm not going to say too much because I know Jake's, I think he's Jake's new favourite player. So I'll let Jake talk about him.
Yeah, I'll start with Hugo. I think he's about 23, isn't he? So he's not overly young. I wouldn't say he was a proper youngster, but he's not played much first grade before. But for me, he looks a real good player, something to work with. I think he's here for 3 or 4 years, isn't he? Signed quite a lengthy contract. Really impressed with him, runs it in hard, looks defensively pretty good. Did notice in pre-season he's maybe prone to odd error, a bit like Seb. But if you can get that out of him, I mean, he's 10 years younger than Seb. I think he's a great replacement for him moving forward in terms of his long-term position in team. Can't see him playing too much this year in first team, given players we've got coming back. But I hope we manage to get him a decent loan spell out in Championship or somewhere, because you don't want these players just playing reserves once every few weeks, because they're not going to develop that way. So I think once Rushton Fenton's back, I think, you know, I've got to get him out on loan, and hopefully with performances he's putting in pre-season, there'll be a few suitors in Championship for him. In terms of like-for-like replacements, I mean, Clune can't be any worse than Farge, because he didn't really turn up here, did he? Really? We're injured most of the time. I don't think we saw anywhere near at best of him, really. So it's only a positive. If Clune stays fit, it's a big improvement on where we were at last year for me. Murchie, not really known too much about him previously. I've seen some of his highlights. He's a big boy, that's for sure. I mean, when he came over to shake his hands after the game, he's a fair size. Says more the size of a prop, really, but fitness levels of a second rower. So I think he'll do well, like Watson said, after last year. You know, we need some more youthfulness inside. He's a good 10 years younger than McQueen as well, so hopefully he can make a good career here and not just come here for a few years and then go back. A bit like Luke Yates, you know, stick around and actually have a decent Super League career. Who else we got? Swift. Well, yeah, I mean, Swift were phenomenal last year. He caused us havoc in that first game when we went to Hull. I think the meters he's made on Friday night were outstanding. But I think from speaking to my friends at Hull, he sort of brought that into his game the last couple of years as he started to mature a bit. Still got that speed in his legs, maybe not as quick as he once was, but still a lot quicker than we've had at wing previously. I think he'll be probably finish our top try scorer, I think, this year, if we get the ball to him. Who else have I missed? Deakin. Yeah, I'll go to Deakin first. Clearly not going to be starting nine, I think, to start the season, judging by pre-season and the fact he played at Wigan. He's a young lad, he's 20. You know, he's younger than most of players in that squad, so got to give him time, I guess. He's here for 2 years, two-year contract. Just hoping that he comes good, and when he's been given the opportunity, that he takes it with both hands and makes a real go of it. But like I said, I've not seen enough from him to say whether he's going to be the next Danny Levi or a top nine, but hopefully he is. But going on to the hooker position, I did think that were an area we needed to recruit a bit more in pre-season, you know, bringing a top class nine. Like I said on West Yorkshire Sport, you know, I don't think Milner and Goldiner would get in another top six side as a starting nine. I feel that's like a weak link. If one of them gets injured, I think we're a bit, especially Milner, I think we're quite short there at present. But saying that, Ashton looked good on Friday. Looked twice as good as he did last year. So, who knows? You know what last player I missed out? Sorry.
Wallace.
Yeah, I mean, Watson keeps referring to him as a youngster. Don't see him as a youngster, really, with his age, 24. For me, that's a Super League winger that should be coming into the prime. But going by how he played on Friday and in some of the pre-season games, it looks good, yeah. I'm hoping that we've consistent time in first team, because he didn't play much last year. He's just going to get better and better, and I think he will, to be honest with you. Runs it in hard, great speed, great finishing. Yeah, looking forward to seeing more of him, really.
Yeah, just noticed a theme, actually. Murchie, Wallace and Salabia, they're not young players, but they don't have much first grade experience. I think they're all pretty hungry, aren't they, to prove themselves and be first league players.
Yeah, without a doubt. But I think Russell was impressed this week, and he said he's he'd like Watson to stop calling him a youngster now. You know, he's 24, 25. And I think when Watto identifies a player as a youngster, they always seem to be mid-20s. Whereas, like, for me, a youngster is someone that's 18, 19, 20. So I don't know what he'd call somebody 18. But, you know, they're not youngsters, really, are they? The players that have come to with a point to prove that want to knuckle down and get established themselves as Super League regulars, you know, which is good, I think.
Just on Russell, I think he needs a mention as well. I thought he had a really good game.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, we're phenomenal defensively. Like I said, from West Yorkshire Sport, he's far better than Tui in terms of his defence. I know he's not as quick as Tui, and he doesn't have the handling skills of Tui. But defensively, he's brilliant. I thought he managed the game alongside Clone exceptional on Friday night.
Right. Yep. So we'll move on now to we said we're each going to pick one player that we're tipping to have a big year in 2024. I'm going for Ollie Wilson. I can't believe he's actually come into his sixth season with the Giants now. Although in 2019, he joined sort of halfway through. So it's his fifth full season this year. 24 this year, I think he's brilliant every week. He's very consistent, very tough. And I think now as he's turning to, you know, 24, he's coming into his prime years as a prop. And I think we'll see him step up and become, you know, one of the leaders of our pack now, and develop even more than into even better player than he already is for me. Nat, who's your player to have a big year in 2024?
I'm going to go opposite end to you, and I think Leroy's going to have a big year. I know that probably sounds stupid to some people. You're tipping a 35-year-old to have a big year when he's a club legend and he's done all this and this for the club, but let's remember he's played fullback, he's played wing, he's played centre. He got moved into forwards last year, and I actually really like him as a loose forward, 13, and the ball playing. If it was up to me, I'd move Yates to prop, start Leroy at 13, and when Harry Rushton's back, use him to spell with Leroy, so then you've got two ball playing 13s, and Yates can just be right on that prop. I just think that ball playing at 13, it frees up the light. It will free the lights of Tui and Jake out wide. That's where they do their best work. And he's hitting his second row of centres. I think we need that.
He doesn't struggle for size as well, Leroy. He's always been a big lad, hasn't he? He's big enough to be a prop, really. You know, he's filled out. He's always been a big, even at centres. You know, he's a big lad, isn't he?
That's it. So I generally think I'd probably give him the number 13. Like I say, we're outstanding Friday night. He's definitely up there for people's man of the match, 100%. So my player to have a big year is probably Leroy. I leave him at 13, and I just think we'll see the best of him later in his career.
He's been brilliant as well, because, you know, let's not forget, his career looked like it might be over a few years ago.
Yeah. You know, and I'll say I wanted people putting my hands up saying he should have retired, but
the way he's come back is like,
yeah. It's brilliant. I mean, I didn't know at the time that the club put him on the wrong rehab program. I thought it was just a case of that it were done. But yeah, for somebody to come back like that and put a performance in, because I thought that was his best performance in the last couple of years, that on Friday night, to be fair, it were outstanding.
Who was your tip, Jake, to have a big year?
There's two, really, and I can't really decide. First one was Sam Alsall. I thought he had a big year last year, and I was expecting him to kick on this year. And hopefully that he does when he gets the chance. But I think Fenton, I think he's been, you know, after his year at the Bulls last year where he were outstanding, every Bradford fan I spoke to were desperate to get him back there this year. But I think, and obviously when he made his debut away at Wigan, I thought it was quality there. And I thought we were really unlucky then to get dropped the week after. And I think in different circumstances, if we weren't doing so poorly, I think he'd have stayed inside last year. I'm expecting him to probably get his home debut next week. And I think he'll take it with both hands, and I think he'll push to become a sort of mainstay in the side this year.
Absolutely. Well, it's been very positive so far, isn't it, this podcast? That shows what a win does for you. Moving on now to a couple of talking points from the game in general in round one. We saw four red cards and nine yellows. I've watched them all back, I think. Well, I'll let you guys talk about it. What do you think about the reds and the yellows?
Well, if you see that what Luke Yates got banned for in pre-season, and then you see the Harry Smith challenge, How is that not a red card? That bloke is going to have to be banned for World Cup Challenge and then for a couple of weeks after. If it isn't, it just shows how corrupt the RFL is. I've read today that the video refs actually wanted to give him a red card and referee overruled it on field. They go to them for advice to see the incident better than they can and then they overrule it. Something doesn't add up to me. It's just, it's game by game. There's no consistency. I mean, I have watched the Westerman and Watts tackle back. You could argue that Westerman maybe hit him first and then he went into Watts. But still, for me, it's if that's a red card, game's going downhill rapidly. If we see them every week, it's just going to ruin games. Games are going to get decided by referees waving the cards. Back to incidents in our game. You know, I haven't watched the game back yet, so I don't really know. Can't comment, but I did see a couple of incidents in our game, like Hewitt's challenge and a few others, and I thought, what on earth is that for? So, whether it calms down after a couple of weeks, don't know, but some of them this week were a bit outrageous, really.
Just on the four red cards, the Franklin Pellet one, I mean, that's a red card.
Obvious.
The one, likewise, you know, you kicked him in the face. I don't think that's part of the new rules. I think that's just retaliation. Probably would have been last season. The Watts one and the McLaurin one are probably, maybe they're part of the new interpretation. Nat, do you think the game's gone, or do you think players just need to adjust to it?
I originally said, when I saw the Watts one, that the game had gone, I said on Twitter, I don't like saying the game's on soft, because anyone who plays a game, you've got to be tough. But I have rewatched it and I can see why Watts was sent off. There's direct contact with his shoulder to his head. However, Westerman hits him in the face first. Now, I don't know what the ref's supposed to do there, because surely you can't send them both off. So I didn't know about it. But still, I wouldn't like to see that a red, because for me, if it's going to be a red card, I like to say it's because the player meant to do it. I don't think Watts meant to connect to his shoulder and to his head. The Wigan player did saw bend down just at the last minute and end thing. I think if he'd have stood straight, Watts would have hit him in his chest area. The one good thing I did see on Saturday, I suppose, was everyone in the rugby community kicked off and moaned about Watts being sent off, but then they sent off McLaurin in the warning game straight away after, when they were both very similar challenges. If one McLaurin got away with just a yellow or not, I think it would have been even more like up in arms about Liam Watts. At least it looks like it's direct contact, intent. Even if he didn't mean to, it's going to be a red, because that's what both refs said to the players actually on the day as well. Yeah. So I think the players are just going to have to adjust to it, because these are the rules the RFL's brought in. I think one key thing is, let's not all shout at the referees for sending them off, because they're just sticking to the rules the RFL have made. They probably don't want to send people off because it spoils the game. Chris Kendall said that, the HGCA fans forum, we don't want to send players off, it spoils the game, we get that. But if the RFL bring the rules in, the refs have got to abide by them, haven't they? And that's been going back to the whole game, like I say, Pele, that's been a red for 10, 15 years, so that's not a discussing point. For me, I thought Ligi Sal deserved his red card. You can't retaliate. For me, he purposely looked at the player, kneed him in the head, then held his shirt and kneed him in the head again. And yes, Parcells shouldn't have done what he'd done, but for the last 4 or 5 years, you know you can't retaliate. You can't swing your boots, you can't punch. So I think both of these decisions were correct. It's just going to be getting the consistency right in the contact to the head. You've set your precedent now in the round one. So let's see for another 26 rounds plus your playoffs. Let's not change what happens in the semi-final and you might cost a team a chance. But let's not change that, because that's what happens.
What about the Smith one though, Nat?
Smith, that...
Yeah, when we've seen Will Price get sent off and get 8 games for that one he did, and then you see the Smith one and you're thinking...
Now, I'm going to be controversial here again. I probably do think it's a red, due to the way the rules are this year. But I also thought Luke Hooley tucked his head in to land on his head. I thought he could have easily stretched himself out and landed on his body sort of thing. I think Hooley knew what he was doing and did it to try and get Smith set off. Now, I'm not saying he did that, because I get the players can get seriously hurt by doing that. You know, we all remember Richie Myler doing it a few years back against us, and we all said, well, what if he'd got hurt? But that's another issue. But I've seen a few people say it, and I thought, I do quietly agree that I thought Hooley tried playing for it. But yeah, this day and age, it should have been red, especially if the video ref told him to send him off and he hadn't done. That, we have a big issue there. If the video ref still gets 3, 4, 5, 6 looks at it on video, but the guy was at one look at it, if he was so confident it's a yellow card, why did he wait for the video ref input would be my question. That's where we have a big issue from this week, if that's true what Cass would have said.
Yeah, so it's so difficult, isn't it? There's so much going on in each instance, and it's happened so quickly. Just have to see how it goes through the earth. If the referees keep up to this, this level of consistency with the red cards, but hopefully not, because we want to see.
I'd be worried if I were a big bloke now. You know, if you're a big prop and you're defending, and you've got smaller bodies running at you and dipping down, it's going to be so hard, and it makes the Tom Burgess side. Put sort of a negative on the Tom Burgess signing for us next year. If it's going to get worse and worse, suddenly signing a 6'5" big unit that could potentially be getting sent off for making, you know, what would be a normal tackle last year, you know.
If I were Liam Watts, I'd retire.
Well, yeah, somebody said that. Yeah.
Not to do his own fault. He could be in a lot of trouble this year and paying a lot of fines out because, like I say, it's someone like Victor Radley in there. Well, they all kicked off saying he's going to have to change the way he defends because of the new NRL rules. But it's same over here. People like Liam Watts, he's 34, 35 now. He's been doing it for 10, 15 years. And all of a sudden, he asks him to change because he's going to have to change. Whereas he's literally going to be getting red card every week. And so it's them, like you said, them players are very interesting of how they're going to adapt if the rest carry on like this.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it all plays out. Hopefully, we don't cop too many of them. Another talking point from the weekend, something I annoyed me really. In the ground when it's a video referee, with all the 6 split screens. As a fan in the ground, I didn't have a clue what was going on. I've not seen any games live this weekend on TV. I've just watched highlights. But what's it been like for the viewer when they have all those split screens? Is it clear or is it a bit of a mess?
No, it's absolutely great. Like the first one they went to it at Lee on Friday, you know, when he went up no try, didn't it, and they put it down on the dead ball line. I generally thought the screen were broke. Mm. And that's not, I thought, oh, the screen's broke, it's fine. Then it came out that it kept doing it. I'm thinking, the screen's not broke here. And my mate, who's a whole fan, was watching the game and texted me during the game saying, what's going on with it? Have you got 6 screens at the game? I went, yeah. So I think that's what they've got on TV as well. Mm. And so if the ones that are not actually on Sky, the ones that are on Super League Plus as well, just being shown on Sky. So obviously the Leeds game and the Hull Derby, they were fine because they've got all the Sky. It's like a normal Sky game. Mm. It's the others that I think they even show it on Sky. And it was so confusing, like, which one. I suppose they've done that, so it makes it easy for the video ref, but I don't know how, because 6 screens, which one are you supposed to look at? Like, that one that you've gone on the dead ball line, I don't know what you two for, but one angle I thought, wait a minute, he's actually got that down.
Yeah,
we might be in trouble. The next angle, it looked like he dropped it. The next angle, it ground on the dead ball line. I'm like, well, now you have 3 different screens showing 3 different things. What you know, it's a good job Jack Smith went no try. So I think if he'd gone try,
might have been given. Probably did it. Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, something that needs to be looked at, I think, both for the experience of the fan in the ground and the viewer at home, needs to be much clearer. But we'll move on. And next up, we've got St. Helens at home on Saturday. Obviously, going to be a tough game. Nat, what do you see as the keys to getting a good result or at least good performance from that game?
I think we're going to have to defend just as good as we did at Lee, if not better. I believe Saints will chuck a lot more as. I know Lee chucked quite a bit, and I thought their execution were poor at times, which let us off the hook. But obviously, don't know, we're defending great, but I think that defensive grit and attitude is going to have to be there again and another step up. And we're going to have to keep hold of the ball with more discipline in attack, really, and complete your sets, kick long. Because if you give Wells below, Max Dodd, Clark, the chance to have a full set in our half, then eventually they will take the chances. I did speak to my mate, who was a Saints fan, who went to their game versus London on Friday, and he actually said, "Don't worry about it. You've got nothing that much to worry about. It wasn't great." But then I'm thinking, you weren't great, but you scored 42 points. Okay, rolling against London, who we think will struggle this year. But if my team's scoring 40 points and we're not playing great, I'm over the moon. So, yeah, I think they'll chuck a lot more at us. So, again, defence-wise, let's just be spot on. Show that grit, show that attitude. Keep fighting for each other. Keep hold of the ball, and we never know what could happen.
Yeah, interesting you say that, because obviously London are probably going to be the weakest team in the league this season. So maybe the fact that we've had a tougher game against Lee, maybe that could play into our hands. Maybe we might be that little bit sharper. Maybe I'm clutching at straws.
Yeah, no, I agree. Defensively-wise, I don't think London will chuck that much at them. So I would hope that with Clune and Milner, I think it'd be 2A and Russ, will chuck a lot more at them than London did last week. So, yeah, we should be used to, like I say, the shape that Lee put to their right will be exactly the sort of shape that Saints will chuck out with Tommy Makinson out wide. And what tore us apart Magic Weekend last year. So, yeah, I can see where you're coming from. Maybe it's clutching straws, but I agree. Hopefully that stands in good stead.
Jake, second game of the post-James Roby era for St. Helens. Think it might be a good time to play him?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Darrell Clark is coming towards the end of his career as well. I mean, I don't know how long he signed at Saints, but he's certainly not the player he used to be. Roby always played well against us every time we played Saints. One thing St. Helens don't have that like other teams like Leeds and Wigan is like proper pacing backs like they used to do, which I think generally we cope quite well with. I mean, they always beat us in recent times, but we never generally get hammered. Well, I know we did away last year, but at home we've generally not got hammered by Saints for quite a while. It's always a good game. I think we need to do what we did against Lee and get in the faces quite aggressively, you know, like some Matty Lees, Alex Wormsley. I'm not sure what to expect from Saints this year. I did expect to look at BBC at scores and expect them to have put 60-plus past London, potentially, given that we'd put 50 past them in pre-season. So when I only saw it with 44 or something like that, I thought, either maybe London are better than I thought, or maybe St. Helens are just didn't get out of first gear, really. So, not sure, yeah. I noticed Wacker Blake were on the wing, not in centres. I noticed Knowles weren't playing, so I don't know whether he's injured. But apart from that, they look like they've pretty much got a full strength side. So I know we've still got a few injuries, but where we played on Friday, if we get in the faces and, you know, yeah, who knows?
I think I did read so that Knowles was out injured the weekend. Joe Batch is definitely out for Friday. Yeah. I think they said Knowles had a chance of being fit for round two. So, obviously, they just wait and see Knowles. But yeah, I think Batch will be out. Maybe Knowles.
Yeah, but I think if we, you know, if we are wanting to compete at that top end at table, at some point soon, we're going to have to start on odd occasion putting away at likes of St. Helens and Wigan at home. See no reason after Friday's performance why it can't be this week now.
Well, I think last year we played Saints and Wigan early, didn't we? And we came close in both games, if memory serves. But
yeah,
we got the line. So there's positives there. Maybe it'll go a different way this time. In terms of team selection, we've got, I think, Tui's back from his ban. And Fenton was the 18th man at the weekend. And Household and Levette didn't play either. Jake, would you make any changes to the 17?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably bring Fenton in for Hugo. That's no fault of Hugo. I think he's been brilliant, like I've said. But I think, you know, Fenton's probably at this stage the better player. We've seen what he's done at Championship throughout the whole season. Watson doesn't seem to like to use that fourth sub for long sometimes. I just think Fenton, if he's only going to get 10 minutes, 15 minutes, Fenton could probably make a bigger impact at this stage. And he's a bigger body as well. I know Hugo's big, but Fenton's pretty big for his age. And I just think with the likes of Wormsley, who comes on for his second stint, it could be good to have that big body at middle of the field.
Nat, any changes?
The only change I'd make is I'd probably play Tui at full-back.
Who's going to have to, isn't
he? I think Jake's going to be out after feeling his HIA. So I know Jake's a massive fan of not moving half back to fullback and having a fullback to replace a fullback. But
you've got to do this week because who else plays fullback?
Who else is going to play fullback? Yeah. You're going to play Tui there. So
Yeah,
Tui for Connor. I wouldn't be against what Jake said, Fenton for Hugo, but I'm actually quite impressed with Hugo when he came on for the last 5-10 minutes at the end of the game. I think he did 3 runs and they're all, you know, 5-10 meter runs. So I think you probably trust him a bit more if you needed to.
Do you think he might put Gold into fullback, stick with Russell and Clone, and then bring Deacon in, or put Tui on bench?
Having a more defensive fullback might be an option.
I think the Ashton at fullback might be just be put. I wouldn't personally, but I think it's a possibility of the fact that Ashton's sound defensively. And against Saints, as much as you need to score points, yeah, defence needs to be spot on to beat someone like that. So defensively, it might do for that, but I'd be amazed if he didn't just put two back at fullback.
Yeah, I think that's where the way he'll go. But yeah,
for me, I've always been the case that you don't change a winning side. So.
Yeah, I think he probably will go to it full back, but the more that we discuss it now, I'd probably put Golding there and put Tui on the bench. Then you've always got the option to change it if it's not working. But we'll see. And finally, predictions for the game. Nat, what are you going for?
Said lead beaters and I writ us off. And I know this is another step up, but I just don't think I can rise off again and watch us win. I'm going to stick and have confidence in the boys and stick and say Giants by 4.
Jake?
I'm going to back us again this week. I did on my Yorkshire Sport and I kind of changed my mind before kickoff. But I think I'll go Giants by 8 this time.
Wow. Well, I've got to complete the hat trick, haven't I? Giants by 1.
It's all right doing it away from home, but I think if you want to get that feel-good factor back again, you know, we ain't got an home game for a while after this, and I think getting those fans down, I know there'll be a few missing because at World Club Challenge on the same day, but if we can get a decent win at home, I just think it creates that feel-good factor, and I think if we're going to do that this year, it has to be Saturday.
It'd be a massive statement of intent if we do.
Yeah. I think
to be about as captain and his best forward in Yates and this probably controversial but arguably his best player in Jake Connor or his most skillful player and then to beat St. Helens like say who have Wellsbeth, Lomax, Dodd, Clark, Makinson, Walmsley, they have all them fit, you know, like it'd be some statement of intent if you can beat them in round 2 with a couple of your key players missing.
Just on that, I mean Do you think at some point this season, how does Watson keep everyone happy when you've got, he speaks highly of Ari Rushton, who they said is only 2 weeks off, who's back in full training now. How does he force his way into the squad? You know, how does Savelio have to wear Hewitt and Murchie played on Saturday if we find out what's actually wrong with him? How does he force his way back in? You know, can you see that causing any issues at camp? The fact that people like Sam Alsall might not be playing, you know, all these players that could easily be starting 17 might find themselves having to wait for weeks before they get a chance.
No, because you always end up with niggles and injuries, especially at Huddersfield. So I think they'll all get the chance. And I think my one big thing from last year, which I hope, when Watson keeps speaking, saying that he's learned his lessons, I hope that's not if a player has one bad performance, you're out the side. Because I don't think that's right. If you've come in, just say like Masters has 5 good games at the beginning of the year and then he's out for a couple of games. And Sam also gets a go, but he has one bad game in that too. It's a bit harsh to drop him straight away because it can take you a couple of games to get up to speed and get into the rhythm. So yeah. I'd like to see him give people a solid chance, but he gets paid the big bucks to keep them all happy. I suppose it's a team game, so as long as your teammates are doing well, I think you should be happy, but that's easy for us to say sat in the stands.
Do you see Sam Alsall's long term position being in centres over at wing?
Yes. Yeah, easily. He's so skillful, it's untrue. Like seen him play at Wigan a few times, seen him play at Newcastle, seen him play in our reserves. I think the skill set is wasted on the wing.
Yeah. I mean, only thing I
have an option telling them when you've won so swift get injured.
Yeah. I just think in terms of a squad, I just feel like we've got maybe one too many expensive squad players in squad that we could probably sacrifice for one player of probably higher quality. I really struggle to see this year how Jake Bibby and Avi Levette are going to get in this side unless there's some serious injuries. You know, and at the stage of the career that they're at when they're both past mid-20s, sort of on the back end of that now, approaching 30 sort of thing, how they, you know, they're going to be wanting to play. And I just can't see how, unless we get massive injuries, that Levette and Jake Bibby are going to force them into this side.
On a positive side, they're not bad replacements to bring in if you do get injuries. You could have worse players coming into your team. So as a fan who doesn't have to keep them all happy, I'm happy to have them in the squad, obviously. I'm sure Watto would rather have them headaches than have the headaches of who I'm playing because I've so many injuries. So, but I see where you're coming from.
Good problems to have, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, any other business from you two?
No. Looking forward to Saturday's game now. You know, this off season, first time is when I'd really fallen out of love with rugby league, really, after the back end of last year. But that performance on Friday's brought that all back, and I'm back buzzing.
I've lured you back in. Always happens, doesn't it?
But, just a quick mention, I think, to the club, signing Tom Burgess, big signing. I managed to keep it quiet, and no one heard that coming. Obviously, I know what Sam Burgess said about, obviously, we blew him out of the water, so it must mean he's on a hefty wage packet to come here, but just to get someone out of the club. He's one signing that could bring people down to the stadium to watch him. You know, your young fours, like you mentioned Ollie Wilson earlier, I doubt he's going to want to leave the club when Tom Burch is coming in his position and what he can learn off Tom. So I think fair play to Watson and Richard Fewis and Keith and Ken and everyone else who are part of getting that Tom Burgess signing over the line so quickly.
No, it's a brilliant signing that. I went to the same high school as Tom. They were never quite as tall back then, but massive, massive bloke now. I think back then, in his younger days, he were probably deemed the worst out of the four brothers in terms of rugby potential, but he's probably gone on to have the best career, to be honest with you. You know, in terms of what he'll have probably made out at game financially and the amount of games he's played, he's probably outdone all his brothers, hasn't he, really? Especially as he's going to hopefully play for another 3 years after this for us. You know, I think he's had an exceptional career, really. And hopefully, like I said, he mentioned himself getting into schools. I think that's a big thing to have a, you know, an NRL winner, you know, somebody that's led his country, still probably arguably the best English prop in game, getting into schools, especially when he's that size as well. I think it's could be brilliant for Huddersfield and, you know, community.
Absolutely. Exciting times. And a lot of positives come out of the club at the moment. So
yeah. I mean, I have heard as well that there might be another decent, maybe not to that extent, but another strike decent signing that we may announce for next year. But don't know who, but just what somebody told me. But I do think we're probably another proper strike player down from having that top side. You know, next year I might have a few leave. I mean, at some point, you know, if these youngsters like Fenton, Ollie Wilson and that, they're going to have to overtake Seb in pecking order, you know, was 32 at some point. Otherwise, you know, your Wiggins, your St. Helens, like look at George Delaney and some of, you know, Harvey Hill and some of the props at Wigan, you know, as soon as they get in and they're good enough to play. So I think it's time for ours to do the same now.
I'm amazed, to be honest, if Ollie Wilson's not in my English or not with Seb already. The conversation I had earlier where you were saying I'd move Yates to prop, I said Yates, Hill, Greenwood, Wilson, English at prop. One of them are probably going to have to miss out if you play a hooker and Harry Rushton on the bench as your replacement 13. That's not even including Seb and Hugo. So prop, loose forward, it's not a position that we struggle with, but yeah, I'd hope that Wilson, English above Seb in the pecking order. That's no disrespect to Seb.
Yeah. So before we wrap up then, who would be, in your view, you know, if not taking into account Friday, who would be your favourable 17?
Me?
Yeah, you go first, Josh, yeah.
Oh, well,
What is Josh? It gives me time to think.
My first try 17. Connor, Swift. Oh, it's difficult because, like, on the back of Friday, you got to say Masters, haven't you? But it changes through the season, doesn't it? You know, we've got a lot of good players, I think, in most positions that I think we really did underachieve last year. And I think we've been written off this year, which probably suits us a bit better.
Yeah. And we haven't blown his own trumpet, which we did last year.
Yeah, you but know. I still think the squad's as good as last year, just without all the hype. So yeah. I think we've got a strong 17. Whoever we put out, even if we have like five players out, we've got a strong 17. And not many teams can say that.
No, I agree with that.
Can we come back to that next week? So can
yeah, we'll come back to that next week. After
Put that as a discussion point on the Giants fans Facebook page, and yeah, we can see what everyone's strongest 17 there.
Yeah,
if there's any fans that want to come on as like a ad hoc on any week, any fans are coming on and giving you views, we're open to having people on. I know my mate Danny Mitchell will be listening. He's wanting to come on one week and give his views after a game. So,
yeah,
probably after we've done bad, to be fair. But
well, that was your job.
I definitely agree. Like I say, I think it's just we're just three Giants fans giving our opinions, and people agree, people disagree. So, like I say, if anyone wants to come on and give their opinion, obviously they're more than welcome.
Yeah, we want to get people involved, and hopefully we'll do one again next week. And ahead of that, we'll put a couple of posts out and get people's views, get them read out. Yeah, we want to get people involved in this, not just three of us. You know, it's for everyone. But yeah, hope you've enjoyed listening to it. Cheers, boys, for coming on. And yeah, hopefully we can get a result at the weekend.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.